afternoons permitted to cover a very wonderful part of a very wonderful text that's just now coming from BBP, a translation of Srihat Bhagavatamrita by Sanatana Goswami. I'll give a little background for those of you that don't know what it is. Srihat Bhagavatamrita is, you gotta jump over everybody and come into a landing area. Make a little path so we can get through. There's some front row seats, and otherwise you have a balcony up there. Very good. That's good. It's not clean back there, so just stay right where you are. Very simple way of describing Srihat Bhagavatamrita is that it's a commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam. Not exactly what it is, but it serves that purpose. Sanatana Goswami, amongst the six Goswamis, was the eldest and treated amongst the Goswamis as the senior member of the six Goswamis. Rupa Goswami considered him his spiritual master, although they were brothers, and in another sense, we're all followers of Rupa Goswami. We're all the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are called Rupa Nugas. So, another sense, Rupa Goswami was the most outstanding member of the six Goswamis. But then how do you say who's most outstanding? So they're all exalted, but Sanatana Goswami was respected amongst them as the senior member of the six Goswamis. And we'll be visiting tomorrow. Part of the plan for tomorrow is to visit the temple of Madan Mohan, which is the temple that Sanatana Goswami established. His deity was Madan Mohan. We'll hear some details of that tomorrow. The Madan Mohan deity is the presiding deity over Sambandhagyan. I think most of the persons here know what that means, but the Vedic knowledge is divided into three very broad categories: Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. The Sambandha deals with the literal meaning is relationship, so it deals with understanding all things and their relationship with the Supreme. Krishna is the source of all things, and each thing has its particular relationship, and understanding of that relationship of all things with Krishna, that's Sambandhagyan. The presiding deity over Sambandhagyan is Madan Mohan. Sanatana Goswami worshipped Radha Madan Mohan. And so his teachings express the conclusive understanding on Sambandhagyan. And he is amongst the writings. Well, yesterday we visited one of his bhajan kutirs by some of you. We lost some of you along the way. Chakaleshwar Mahadev and the Sanatan Goswami Bhajan Kutir along the banks of Manasi Ganga. But his writing contribution particularly is known for Hari Bhakti Vilas, which is a compendium of instructions how to perform different rituals. Starts in the very beginning with initiation and speaks about marriage and death and sannyas and varnashram duties and how all so many written deity worship, mantras, procedures, everything, detailed, very, very, very detailed. Sanatana Goswami wrote that, although it was compiled by Gopal Bhatta Goswami. Anyway, so along with Hari Bhakti Vilas, which Sanatana Goswami is most known for, this Brihat Bhagavatamrita is especially delightful because it presents in a very refined and far more concise way than Srimad Bhagavatam, the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. And I'm not thoroughly versed in, because I've only read through the book most of it one time, so I'm not the intricacies, my main appreciation is it's like a piece of fine art where so many tiny subtle innuendos, and to explain the philosophy, and if one who's not experienced will appreciate it as a very nice story, and as one becomes more experienced, it's stating a very important and very profound distinction in our understanding of the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. We're going to focus on part two, so just summarize what part one is. This morning we talked about it. Brihat Bhagavatamrita is an addendum, there's a Sanskrit word for this, but it's an add-on to Mahabharata. It's meant as an explanation of some of the important points of Mahabharata, just as Hari Vamsa does the same in relation to Srimad Bhagavatam. So the narration begins. In other words, it's a literal. It's a part of our Vedic literature. And the narration begins first with the appropriate Mangalacharana, just like you begin any auspicious activity, and some words are invoked that glorify. You have to sprout wings and fly over here. Otherwise, just weave your way through the... There's a front row seat if you like, front row seats. Okay.
I'll go to the buffet chair.
After the invocation is presented, Krishna is glorified, Lord Chaitanya is glorified, Rupa Goswami is glorified, and the subject matter is identified, and the subject matter is expanding glories and understandings about Lord Krishna. So the literature begins with a discussion between Jaimini, who is a sage, and the son of Maharaj Parikshit. Who is the son of Maharaj Parikshit? Who became king after Maharaj Parikshit? Janamejaya. So Janamejaya wants to hear. He just heard a description of Mahabharata from Jaimini Rishi. It's a description that's different than the Vyasadeva's compilation of Mahabharata. Apparently, the commentary explains that there were more than one accepted at the time authentic, bona fide Mahabharatas. And this particular one that was narrated by Jaimini Rishi, unlike the one of Vyasadeva, which was emphasizing more the duties of varna and ashram, moralities and ethics of conduct, this particular Mahabharata was speaking more about the personality of Godhead, very, very clearly and distinctly. Krishna as the personality of Godhead was much more prominent. And he liked the narration so much that he inquired from Jaimini, is there something more that you can narrate? This was so wonderful. I've never heard anything like this. So Jaimini said, you are such a good listener that you've inspired me to narrate this addendum to the Mahabharata. There's, I forget the Sanskrit word, akila, anyway, some term, that begins in the following way. And the beginning is that just after Maharaj Parikshit heard from Shukadeva Goswami the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, and he was now prepared to meet his death, from the audience his mother stood up, anticipating his imminent departure by being killed by this serpent that would bite him and instantly kill him with such intense poison that she, her motherly affection was overwhelming her, and she came running forward through the crowd of sages and sobbing and very, very emotional, came before her son, and her son pacified her, don't worry, mother, everything is going to be fine. Having heard this message from Shukadeva Goswami, my consciousness is fixed. Death is due to come to all of us at some time. Now my consciousness is fixed. Don't have any anxiety for me. This message is so wonderful that I've heard. I've completely transcended the existence of this material world. So she asked a very relevant question. If this message is so powerful and so wonderful, can you summarize the essence of it? And her son replied that it's very difficult to summarize in the little bit of time that we have left something that took 7 days to narrate, and 7 nights too. But because your question is so wonderful, I'll do my best, and I'll, rather than retelling the whole thing, I'll tell its essence in the form of a story. So then he begins to narrate a story. And the story is once upon a time, in Prayag, which coincidentally was the very same place where Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami were instructed by Lord Chaitanya in the science of Krishna consciousness. In Prayag, there was one Brahmin. No, there was a group of sages who, at a very, very auspicious time, certain phase of the moon during a certain month, would take darshan of the deity of Keshav and would take their bath in a certain... And Dashashvamedha Ghat. And it's that the glories are enunciated in the Puranas that one who takes their bath at that time, in that place, in that way, the benefits they will derive will be such and such. The glories were described. So the sages were all assembled to take that bath and that god at that time, and they took their bath, and after taking their bath, they were, like devotees will do, the sages were sitting around describing how fortunate they felt that they were, that they had this opportunity, just like we may feel so fortunate to be here in Vrindavan in the month of Kartik. We circumambulated Govardhan Hill on the actual appearance day of Govardhan, or the performance of the Govardhan Leela, and so many wonderful things we could sit and discuss. So the sages were discussing like that the glories of the place, the glories of the activity, how fortunate they were. And while they were having that very joyful, ecstatic exchange amongst themselves, right along the ghat, one Brahmin came, an aristocratic Brahmin, with his entourage, and he had a shalagram shila, and he set up a little temporary altar for his shila, and proceeded to unfold all kinds of paraphernalia, and was going to have a grand abhishek and utsav right there on that particular occasion to worship his shalagram shila. And the details of that abhishek describe the which things were bathing the shila and what he did. It had all the ladies simultaneously preparing preparations which were offered in a grand anukut right there at the ghat. And they offered everything to the deity, and then by that time there was a huge crowd of people assembled to see what was going on, and after everything was offered they distributed all the prasad to all the people. And he really gets into describing in all the living entities, the dogs and the insects, and all living entities were fed sumptuously. And then the family took the remaining, whatever was left, they took their prasad, and he came before his deity, and he offered a prayer to the deity that if there's any benefit, this is a detail that's important, if there's any benefit to be derived from this particular sacrifice and this festival in your honor, may it all go to you, to your glorification. In other words, this signifies that he was not interested in performing something that would then accumulate some piety or some beneficial thing for himself so he would be a better worldly enjoyer. He had no interest in worldly enjoyment. The platform of his devotional service was selfless, unalloyed bhakti. So amongst the sages, it just so happened that one of the sages that was present there was Narada Muni. And Narada Muni, seeing this whole thing, couldn't contain himself any longer. He jumped up and started extolling the glories of this brahmana. How fortunate you are. What a recipient of the mercy of the Supreme Lord you are. And he went on describing what he had seen. You are so opulent, and yet you have no attachment for all this opulence. You use it all in the Lord's service, and describing on and on and on his glories. And the brahmana after Narada had finished, declined accepting any of the honors that he was offered, rather said all of the reasons why they were exaggerations of the fact, and the real fact is he's disqualified. And the real fact is there's someone, if you want to find someone who is the real recipient of the Lord's mercy, I can tell you someone who is a recipient of the Lord's mercy, and describe someone. And this theme keeps repeating itself through the first part. He refers him to someone else, and someone else in this case is a king in South India. And Balaram, you've recently been to Vrindavan. What do you have to tell us? And Balaram, anyway, just all these heart-rending narrations come. Balaram said, what to speak of the gopis, even the land and the cows. Everything is practically shriveled up and perishing. The river Jamuna has shrunk to almost nothing. And the trees are all barren. When Krishna was there, everything was lush. The birds have gone away. Everyone the mood of separation from Krishna is killing every living entity. If Krishna doesn't go back, they'll all die. What to speak of the gopis? So what more can I say? So Krishna got his answer. Anyway, there's so many details. But in this exchange between Krishna and Balaram, they both lose consciousness. Just in the pain of knowing the situation in Vrindavan. And although it seems like a very simple solution, Krishna could just go back to Vrindavan. Then there's some very, very important explanations given by Sanatana Goswami. Actually, by the way, he wrote a commentary to his own book, because it's not really his own book. In one sense, it's a narration that's this addendum to Mahabharata. Not his own book. He's just compiling something that already was. So he wrote his commentary to that. And in the commentary, and some of the verses, there's some explanation, but more of it is in the commentary, why Krishna didn't just go. Because it's subtle, but if Krishna had gone back, first Krishna had, when he left Vrindavan along with Akura, he had told them, I'll be back in just a few days. I've been invited to this festival and there are things that I must do in Mathura. There are some demons I have to kill and some responsibilities. Jarasandha is there and he could destroy the whole Yadu dynasty, and I have to protect the members of the Yadu dynasty. And of course the Kurukshetra battle, and there are things I have to do, but I'll be back. So then he sent Nanda Maharaj, who had also gone to Mathura, he sent Nanda Maharaj back with the same message. I'll be back very shortly. And then with Uddhava, he had sent another message. I will be back very soon. So they don't believe me by now. And if I go, but there's still things that I must do. There's two kind of two sides or two components to the argument. If I go back, since there are still things that I have to fulfill, if I leave, it will kill them. At least now, they're alive. Although your report is that they're on the verge of death. If I go back, it will kill them. Balaram's report was that some had already died out of separation from Krishna. But knowing, even if I come, the second argument was, even if I come, they'll anticipate that I'll leave again. This gets into this consideration of meeting Sambhoga and Vipralambha, the transcendental ecstasies of meeting and loving union and the mood of separation. So Rupa Goswami also discusses this. It's a very elevated subject matter. But when the residents of Vrindavan are meeting with Krishna, they're anticipating very soon there'll be separation from Krishna. There always has been separation from Krishna. Just like the glories of this Govardhan Leela, the lifting of Govardhan Hill, for seven continuous days and nights, the residents of Vrindavan had darshan of Krishna. With their eyes unblinking, they were able to see him. And each of them, according to their rasa, Krishna was reciprocating with them. They were so enraptured that there was no consideration of eating, sleeping, bodily maintenance. They were just absorbed in Krishna. And Krishna was just absorbed in them. But that wasn't the ordinary circumstance. The ordinary circumstance was they would have a short glimpse of Krishna and then some separation. And for a long time, because Krishna had many devotees. There's one passage in Rupa Goswami's writings that the cowherd boys, what to speak of the gopis, the cowherd boys, when they were herding the cows with Krishna, sometimes the path that Krishna was walking on, their vision of him was blocked by Krishna, by a tree. And they practically lost their consciousness, being unable to see Krishna for that duration of time as Krishna was passing by a tree. The intensity of love of the residents of Vrindavan is incomprehensible. And so even in meeting, it would intensify their love so strongly that the anticipation of again being separated from him would be too much. So in two ways, going, I would kill them. So better that I just stay here. Although he wanted to be with them and they wanted to be with him, it was a transcendental argument that he was presenting, that I must stay here. And it was the pain of that was too much for him to bear. And he and Balaram, understanding it, this very deep and difficult to understand subject, they both fainted on the ground, crying, and just lost consciousness. So everybody turned to Uddhava to figure out what to do, because no one else could understand this situation and what to do in this situation. But being very, very, very intelligent, Uddhava immediately arranged for Vishvakarma, the celestial architect, to build in Dwaraka a imitation Vrindavan. He called it Nava Vrindavan, New Vrindavan. Right in Dwaraka, with the trees and the cows and the cowherd boys, because he made the arrangement, cows you can get and cowherd boys you can get, and so, but then he created like statues that were identical looking with Nanda and Jasoda and certain personalities there in Vrindavan, And they arranged, he then arranged for, I think it was Garuda. It's really intriguing. He arranged for Garuda to come and take them, because they're still in Dwarka. So Garuda can't, anyway. He put Krishna and Balaram in their fainted condition, and Mother Rohini, because Mother Rohini had also experienced being in Vrindavan, to go to this nub of Vrindavan. And in the course of being transported there, Balaram started coming to external consciousness. So the whole thing was explained to Balaram, what was going on. This was just to save Krishna from perishing and bring him out of his deep stupor of intense feelings that were just making him incapable of functioning. So when they got there, Balaram was alerted to the whole plan, and then that ends, I think, the sixth chapter, and then the final chapter is some exchange. We can see them when we come back this evening. And so Krishna's now getting revived because he's in the mood of Vrindavan. They're off with the cows. And he's starting to get normal again. And then they get to the ocean in Dwarka, and he thinks it's the river Jamuna. So some wonderful exchanges start to take place with the cows and getting ready to drink the water of the Jamuna, but they can't drink the ocean water because it's salt water. And then he sees in the distance the rising palace of Dwarka out in the middle of the ocean. And he starts to realize, this isn't Vrindavan. What's going on? And gradually he gets clued in by Balaram, what's going on? And there's more very, very wonderful details involved in this narration, but the discussion then switches back to Parikshit speaking to Mother Uttara. So the conclusion that is reached is the message of Srimad Bhagavatam is to understand how to receive Krishna's mercy. And the greatest of all recipients of Krishna's mercy are the residents of Vrindavan. And he retraces the whole narration that Jaimini told to Janamejaya. Retraces the whole sequence, the Brahmana, the king, Indraloka, and so on. Just a quick summary. And then so the great amongst the residents of Vrindavan, those who have the greatest amount of Krishna's mercy are the gopis. Just as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught. And so that concludes part one. And part two begins with Mother Uttara being so enlivened by what she's heard from Maharaj Parikshit. She then has some more questions. And essentially there are two questions that she asks. No. Before she asks, Jaimini is narrating to Janamejaya. And Janamejaya is very excited at what he's heard. And is there more? Can you narrate some more? So Janamejaya says, Jaimini says, yes, there is more, but it's very, very difficult to understand because of the confidential nature of this subject. But because I was there when Shukadeva Goswami narrated all these subject matters to Maharaj Parikshit, in fact, I was sitting right up front, so I could hear very, very well. Only by the mercy of Shukadeva Goswami will it be possible for this very confidential subject to be explained. So he continued the narration with Uttara getting very excited at what she had heard from Maharaj Parikshit, saying, since the greatest recipients of the mercy of Krishna are the residents of are the gopis, then I have two questions. One question is, what is the manifestation of that mercy which they receive? How does it manifest in their lives? And the second question is, how do they achieve it? It's something very much like in the 14th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. This isn't from the commentary, it's just from my appreciation. When Arjuna hears about the three modes of material nature, after hearing that whole narration, and then Krishna says everyone's involved with the modes of material nature, but some have transcended. So Arjuna wants to know, what are the symptoms of one who has transcended the modes of material nature? How do they conduct their lives? And most importantly, how do they get to that position of being beyond the modes of nature? That's really the most important question. Because once, if you have that understanding, you can go beyond the modes of nature, you'll know what the rest of it is. So Maharaj Parikshit similarly said, this is very, very kind. What you've asked is such a wonderful question. No one has asked such a question. And it's such a wonderful question, yet it's so deep and difficult to understand. I'll have to, only by the mercy of Shukadeva Goswami, who has narrated these things to me, will it be possible to explain it. So, and that's a very important part of our teaching, what he just said, because Jaimini said the same thing that Maharaj Parikshit said to Uttara, and that is, it is not possible to understand and or to pass on very, very confidential meanings unless one has received the great mercy, this first whole first part, being the recipient of mercy of the Supreme Lord, coming down in a descending manner through those who are recipients of the Lord's mercy. They can pass that mercy on to others. And there's not another alternative. It's a principle that Krishna has created. So the second part makes that even more clear. Two persons wanted in part two. Two persons wanted spiritual attainment, but they were unable to achieve that spiritual attainment except through the descending mercy. So in the second part, the main storyline is Gopakumar. But before Gopakumar is introduced and his experience of spiritual attainment, before even Gopakumar is introduced, there's a Brahmana. You can see the story is intricate, but when you read, the exchanges are so refined and detailed and delightful, you can get lost in just one little grove of the forest. It's just so wonderful. So, Maharaj Parikshit begins by narrating another story that he heard from Shukadeva Goswami. And it's a story of one Brahmana who is attached to material enjoyment, which is a contradiction. Brahmanas are supposed to be in knowledge of Brahman and detached from material enjoyment. This particular Brahmana was a worshipper of Kamakya Devi, just like the fellow that we encountered. Dinabandhu told me later, the people told him in his ear, he's not a Krishna Bhakta. He's a worshipper of Durga, and besides, he's become a little mad. So this Brahmana, his name is disclosed towards the end. His name was Jana Sharma, very generic name. from Mathura. He was a Brahmana from Mathura, but he left Mathura to go to Assam, where Kamakhya Devi has a very wonderful temple, and he became a worshipper of Kamakhya Devi. So we mentioned this morning, that she gave him this Madan Gopal mantra. When we visit the Madan Mohan temple, bear in mind what I'm going to tell you now. The Madan Gopal deity is actually, it's another name for Madan Mohan. Madan Gopal, Madan Mohan. So, which connects to the fact that Sanatana Goswami, his deity was Madan Mohan, and the knowledge of Sambandh again is what is presided over by Madan Mohan. So he got this Madan Gopal mantra, but he was just interested in fulfilling material desires.